Hello everyone and welcome to the latest Brewing Podcast and some bad news this week as we deliver a rather gloomy message on growth from our guest speaker. But I would urge you not to switch off. It's important that we listen to the opinions from all sides in order to help us arrive at a more informed position. What is more, John Petullo of Janus Henderson has some extremely interesting and non-consensual thoughts to share. And here is just one example.
We think the Fed would probably be cutting rates in the back half of this year.
Okay, for more insight into this position and more detail on why sovereign bonds might perform well this year, please keep listening. But first, here are our disclaimers.
The value of investments can fall and you may get back less than you invested. Past performance is not a reliable guide to future performance. The podcast is not intended as investment advice. No investment is suitable in all cases. Any tax allowances or thresholds mentioned are based on personal circumstances and current legislation which may change. We or a connected party may have an interest in the securities mentioned or may act as principal or agent in those securities from time to time. The podcast content comes from diverse sources whose accuracy cannot be assured. The opinions expressed in this publication are not necessarily held throughout Brewin Dolphin. Investment in currencies other than your own means changes in the exchange rate will cause the value of your investment to move independently of the underlying asset.
Hello everyone and welcome to the latest Brewin podcast. I'm Ben Gutteridge, Head of Fund Research. And today we are joined by our expert bond investor, John Petullo of Janus Henderson, lead manager on their preference and bond fund. It's been a while since we've had a macro-based conversation, so I think we'll talk about growth and inflation and interest rate policy changes of late, but leave some time at the end to talk about the risks and opportunities in the credit space. John, thanks very much for joining us. So let's start on that macro conversation. It does seem as though central banks have taken a bit of a U-turn in policy at the back end of last year and the start of this year. And is that enough, do you think, to sort of stabilise growth and to get inflation moving higher again?
No, I don't think it is, Ben. We think it's classically late cycle. I think last year, everything we put out on our Twitter account and what we spoke to our clients about was it was late cycle. And arguably, it was reasonably easy to rationalise what was going on because the Fed was slowing activity on the rather bizarre assumption that there was too much inflation in America, which we don't agree with, which we'll probably come on to.
Sure.
They've undershot inflation 11 of the last 12 years in their allegedly symmetrical inflation target, which obviously, by the turn of my voice, isn't particularly symmetrical. You had a strong dollar, flat yield curves, and so on, and tighter financial conditions on the idea that there was too much inflation. So I guess we're pleased that there's been almost an embarrassing U-turn by Jerome Powell, and more recently Australia and the UK MPC to some extent. That's welcome. The statistical chance of them engineering a soft landing is about 1 in 4. Now, this economic cycle has been going on for 115 months, would you believe? The record's 120. So we think it's pretty hard to argue that this is a mid-cycle slowdown. And I think there's something a bit more sinister going on. There is a slowdown in global activity. There is a slowdown in global demand for money. And it's probably coming from Asia. The beta of Europe is amazing, how strong the export growth in Europe was. All the growth was basically exporting BMWs to China. And that's all faded. The Europeans are short of inflation. Europe's in a tough space because they just ended QE and they don't really know what to do next. And they're short of inflation. You've had a Trump fiscal expansion, which was meant to reset the growth agenda, the productive capacity, the efficiency at all, and get inflation and growth moving in the States, which broadly hasn't happened at all. They just saddled themselves with more debt.
You're killing us, John.
I know. And the last 2 years, reflation trade was basically driven by the Trump reflation trade, obviously the fiscal expansion, but more recently in 15-16, the Chinese monetary expansion, which was massive and worked, and that floated all boats. And everyone told us last year there was going to be a breakout to growth, and inflation and inflation expectations. Jen and my co-manager did a great video last February talking about the hysteria of inflation. Because remember, Gunn Lack and various other commentators, Jamie Dimon, was saying the 10 years going to 4% and going to 5%, inflation's coming. We were never in that camp. And we think that going forwards, we're actually a bit worried about the lack of growth and the lack of inflation in the world, given that the Chinese have done their thing. And I don't think the current expansion is going to do much. Trump has done his fiscal expansion. So we're a bit short of policy tools going forwards. And hence, we really like sovereign bonds again. And credit is becoming increasingly interesting as well.
Okay, well, we don't dislike sovereign bonds, but there's a good source of debate to be had here now, John, after that plethora of bad news.
They always call me miserable, Ben.
I mean, you highlighted one piece there, was the Chinese stimulus. Yeah. I guess, but can you expand a bit on that? I mean, I think it's widely understood that it's not of scale yet relative to the past, but seems as though policymakers may be willing to sort of ratchet that higher as we move through the year. Should it not be enough to sort of stabilise growth?
Well, we look at the money supply numbers driven by Simon Ward, our chief economist on money moves.
He's got a good record on this.
He's got a fantastic record looking at the rate of change of money supply growth in China is a great leading indicator of global activity. And I'd recommend your listeners to plug into his website. He's been massively helpful in calling the turn in the cycle. And global monetary supply is slowing down. We often hark back to the Japanese experience. So you can make money as cheap as you want, but you need people to want to borrow money and spend it. Not a problem my wife's got particularly, but I think that balance sheet recession idea, as you know, we've spoken about historically, and the Japanification of the world, would suggest that you can make money dirt cheap, but people have to want to borrow it and spend it and have that feel-good factor that they want to lever up their own personal balance sheets.
And China's sort of already in a pretty levered position, isn't it?
Yeah, so, and stock markets are down. Housing's probably a bit wobbly. Population growth is weak as well. So we're just not convinced. We're not necessarily we're there yet in Japan, in China, but it could be. All I'm really saying is the credit intensity of you put an extra renminbi into the system, you won't get the same amount of output, if that makes sense.
Yeah, okay. And I guess we could look at Europe, but agree with you that it does look pretty downbeat, the environment there. But I mean, in the US, I mean, you've talked about the fiscal stimulus already being done, but I mean, there is still a positive fiscal impulse this year. They are going to be spending more this year than they spent last year. And the labour market, we sort of keep coming back to that. It's in great shape and wages are moving higher and inflation's sort of a little bit lower. Good for disposable income. This is a good platform for demand, is it not?
I think, the credit exposure we hold is generally in America. So American businesses are better run, better return on equity, better margins, better EVA, quite attractive, decent reason to exist businesses. They are more levered, that is true, than European counterparts, but generally we kind of like it. And I think America is not a bad bastion to hold up. So they will grow less fast, I think, is what I'm saying. So generally we quite like the American markets and the American credit markets. They're liquid, they're transparent, they're tradable, unlike UK markets and Europe somewhere in the middle. It will grow less strongly. That's all I'm saying. The trend rate of growth in the States is probably 1.5%. The Bank of England actually just downgraded the UK trend rate of growth to 1.4 just last week as well. So people got to grow up and get used to lower rates of growth and, frankly, lower levels of inflation. On inflation, we've written a lot of stuff and spent a lot of time looking at it. We just don't see the pass-through of wage inflation to CPI, to the end prices, if you like. There's a little bit of it. We accept that. Some of the banks we've spoken to would suggest maybe 16% of companies can pass through input costs, as in wage costs, into output costs, as in selling prices.
Yeah.
The traditional economic theory that we all were taught when we were young says it just directly gets passed right through to top lines. But given the transparency of internet, given the competitiveness of pricing, given the globalization of markets, it's pretty hard for companies to push through wage costs onto top lines. And broadly speaking,
it's not a great margin story you're telling here.
Exactly. It's broadly getting absorbed in margins and or cost-cutting programs. So Whitbread, I think last year, they had minimum wage and obviously were buying coffee, presumably in dollars, and sterling went down. Well, they said we've got $150 million cost-saving program to absorb the minimum wage and the weakness of sterling. So that's happened as well. Don't get me wrong, there are some industries which have pass-through costs, but some pass-through costs, if you're a I don't know, if you're manipulating ethylene into plastic, you tend to have a set margin. So the plastic cost goes down, your selling price goes down, but you have the same margin. And if it goes up, you have the same margin, it goes up. So some people kind of leapt on this stuff. And generally speaking, I think they're wrong. You can find exceptions, of course you can. But broadly speaking, we think if inflation was going to come, it would have come last year.
Well, I mean, before we move on to credit, I mean, just thinking about what's priced in from markets and therefore the relative attraction of sovereign bonds.
Yep.
I mean, if we're looking at interest rate expectations for the year ahead, it looks as though the market is anticipating the next move to be down, marginally down rather than up. And, you know, not asking you to sort of repeat everything you've said, but growth conditions are okay, maybe even above trend. The unemployment is, you know, below the natural rate, or unemployment is very low. And inflation, despite the downward pressure that the oil price has put on inflation, CPI is still sort of running around target. It seems difficult for the Federal Reserve to sort of stay on hold in this environment for too long, and as though they may need to start moving again sort of as we get to the middle of the year. And therefore, bond markets, even though growth and inflation might not be great, bond markets are priced in too much of a pessimistic outcome for policy.
Yeah, it's a bit of a cop-out, but I think we're probably fairly priced in the US market now. It's not what the consensus has, rates rising. We don't agree with that at all. The kind of joke is, when the Fed goes on pause, does it peak and that's it? And secondly, how long does it plateau for? We think the Fed will probably be cutting rates in the back half of this year. They target PCE inflation, remember, not core CPI.
Yeah.
A lot of equity people get a bit, they get confused about inflation because they look at headline inflation and that's the old price. So you should always look at core CPI.
Yeah.
The Fed is mandated to look at PCE, which is generally muted and quite low. I think Jerome Powell majored on that on his recent press conference.
Okay.
He kept on saying inflation conditions are muted and contained and all that sort of stuff. So I think they're not an island as well. So they talk about cross currents and headwinds and all that sort of stuff. But they are aware of what's going on in the rest of the world. And there's a lack of growth from the rest of the world. So we think they'll probably be cutting. Is that kind of broadly priced into treasuries? Yeah, at these levels. But, you know, Jenna and my colleague, we got long into the autumn completely against consensus because we thought that whole growth thing was a head fake, as was the inflation. And that's worked beautifully. It's run pretty well, I completely accept. Janice had a great call being long of Australian sovereign bonds, which has been a beautiful position, again, against consensus. That's worked well. We've been long German bunds, which everyone says there's no value on them, but people go buying them. There's not that many German bunds around, to be honest. There's only two Bloomberg screens of German bunds.
What a brave trade buying German bunds.
Sure, but if you look at the Japanese experience, that's exactly what's happened. And people have a flight to quality. There's plenty of Bloomberg screens full of Italian bonds, needless to say.
Well, no, there's of German bonds. I'm sure you can get there, but the consensus all around you is, you know, what on earth are you doing hanging out in German bunds? You know, that's why I commend the trade.
It's quite brave, but I think it's working. UK is getting more interesting as well. I mean, the MPC were a little bit unfortunate because just when Brexit came along, we did have a global synchronized recovery. So Brexit didn't feel too bad just then. And then they had to put rates up and then they had to put them down again.
What about, final question before credit, what about things that are very hard to predict, like this sort of trade policy? You know, it does seem as though that has got a more positive flavor to it and it therefore is less supportive for sort of sovereign bond positions. But I mean, can you trade that? Or indeed, I know Brexit's a bit of a rabbit hole, but I mean, these things that are hard to predict, how do you move your duration positions around that?
Well, quite actively using interest rate futures is the answer, and derivatives are wonderfully useful. I mean, you've got to look what's in the price and where positioning is. So the idea that these things trade at fair value is absurd. They kind of swing from overbought to oversold. But you kind of pick up the narrative and what's going on and where people are positioned. I mean, most of our clients in the UK, and you can probably back us up here on your client base, most people were pretty short of bonds. A lot of people have gone on to alternative investment strategies away from duration, and they're short of duration. They almost hate duration with a passion. And that's not our view. So I think there's still opportunities there. It may pause a little bit. These things don't go in straight lines. Having said that, the German Bund has worked in a beautiful straight line year to date. I mean, it's a great technical pattern. So Yeah, it'll bob around a bit. It'll come and go, come and go. But I just generally sense the economic outlook will deteriorate. And again, I think you want some sovereign bond positioning in there to protect capital and to make capital.
Yeah, I mean, we have some caution. Not I don't think as much as our peers on sovereign debt, but we certainly like our bond funds to have some sovereign debt in there. The idea that they're full of emerging markets and high yield would be a bit of a concern to us. So we're certainly delighted or pleased with how you run your strategy. But on the position, given you have sort of a historic income flavour to this strategy and you're moving into things like bunds, that leaves you a little shy on delivering.
Well, but we can use interest rate futures as overlay strategies.
Well, let us know, inform us how you deliver on that income. And perhaps, exactly.
No, that's fair. I mean, preference bond fund is a quarterly income pay. So the income is massively important to all our clients, and we completely understand that. Well, that's what it stands for. So, this time of the cycle is tough for an income paying fund, because as you say, you don't want to get caught in too long of financials, too long of high beta, high yield, let alone some of the other exotic stuff that some of our competition put in. So we've actually pulled back our financial positioning roughly from 30% 5 years ago to about 16% today. We have cut the dividend stream by roughly, I think it's about 10%, because I think there'll be opportunities to preserve capital for a while. And then I think there will be some sort of moment in credit markets where credit will sell off quite violently. There'll be some event. There always is some defining moment in a financial crisis. And then I think Jenna and I will look to buy quality businesses at better yields than we can get today. So if you like, it's sovereign bond o'clock to us. It's not corporate bond o'clock, if you're with me. I think corporate bond o'clock might well come sometime this year. And then hopefully we can lock in good yields for our clients. Just on that as well, and we're not massively worried about default risk. I think defaults will pick up in Europe, but we've hardly got any European high yield exposure. We much prefer the American their top line, and they can grow their earnings lines to delever. And I don't think that's true of a lot of European businesses, if you look at the earnings per share numbers out of the States. Compared to Europe.
Okay, I mean, if you were to highlight one area which was seemingly rich in yield, that would be European financials. And would you consider that a sensible strategy at this stage in the cycle? I think I know what the answer is.
We think that's probably... Well, we would agree with John Bennett, who, as you know, is not a great fan of European banks. We think it's an absurd strategy. I mean, the European banking equity performance completely mirrors Japanese banking equity performance. So Eurostoxx financials was down 30% last year. And last year was a good year for growth, yeah. So these guys are way behind the curve. Some aren't that well capitalized, but most importantly, they can't really grow their earnings. And return on equity is miserable, absolutely miserable. So we haven't got any European financials whatsoever in the funds. We have got some UK financials and some American financials. The American banks kind of got religion quite early, with TARP and all that stuff, and recapitalized.
But is there even a price for these things that would lure you back in, or is some distance from that, even though it is a bit of a miserable return on equity story?
I think people forget that financials are not great quality businesses. They're highly cyclical, they're low margin, and they're pretty levered. So given that our whole industrial strategy is lend to large cap, non-cyclical, reason to exist, decent businesses, we're pretty cautious on European financials. I mean, a lot of these things shouldn't exist in a traditional sense because they are overbanked and oversupplied, and the return of equity doesn't achieve a return higher than their cost of equity. So, I mean, call me old-fashioned, but they shouldn't really get our clients' capital. I mean, if you like, we are sort of growth bond managers, if you like.
Yeah.
We like growth companies, and we like buying the bonds of growth companies. That is not true of financials. They are value destructive businesses. I generalise, because obviously there are decent businesses like Lloyds, which has done a good turnaround, is well capitalised, generates some capital, and so on. You know, and there's plenty of decent, there are some decent financials, but I just think you've got to be pretty wary in a low growth environment. And then financials invariably are higher duration, so the higher beta as well.
And now you've mentioned your preference for US businesses. I mean, is there any parts of the UK credit market that are of interest?
Yeah, we hold some, but it's very, very selective. So we always joke that the banks in the UK try and get their rubbish businesses off their balance sheets onto the European high yield bondholders books. So, you know, Sterling high yield, I'm talking here. So Sterling high yield is a plethora of very stressed department stores, which obviously your listeners are well aware, and quite a lot of restaurant chains, which Jenna and I have no interest in whatsoever. So we avoid those. There are a few decent businesses in the UK. So Tesco's is a rising star, for example. They've done a pretty good job looking after their bondholders at their expense to their shareholders. Virgin Media is a kind of pretty classic dial cable TV business, which we all begrudgingly pay their fees and for their service levels. Centre Parcs is a great one, which Rebecca in our team has picked. Centre Parcs is playing the staycation business. Their occupancy is up at 98% because they vary the price massively from a soggy February day to a February half-term day. The pricing is amazing. But they do a great job, and Brexit will probably help their business. It's very well run. We've known them for years. It is quite levered, but it trades on a massive equity multiple. So you've got a big cushion in there as well. And we have some European data centers, for example, as well. Modern day businesses, which have got a reason to exist. And then, you know, we're pretty shy of, you know, we haven't got any department stores or any of that stuff. It's just horrendous, really.
So as we look out for the sort of year ahead, are we thinking about a capital sort of preservation year? I mean, much like in the fourth quarter, you know, you sort of stand head and shoulders above your competition, you know, managing to avoid the severity of some of the pain of the credit markets. And therefore, this year, you stand ready to sort of pick up opportunities, but ultimately being defensive? Or do you think you can make a lot of money this year for clients?
Yeah, we are talking bonds here, Ben. Yeah. Remember, I think bond managers get a bit overexcited both ways, don't they? I mean, we're up about 2.5% year to date. Last year, we were down about the same number, but that was against our peer group. That was really good. And our strategic bond performed even better last year. The slight problem is we think there's been a massive short covering risk rally gone on this year. So US high yield is up about 5.5% year to date, but it fell 5.5% Q4 of last year. So you kind of got to look at it throughout, across the calendar year, if that makes sense. So, I mean, Jenna and I were discussing the other day, we probably think US high yield will probably do, I don't know, between 4 and 8 this year, but it's just done 5. Yeah. So arguably, you've got your majority of your return in the first month and a half of the year. So what does that mean? That means there'll be more volatility. So we'll probably keep our powder dry, expect more volatility into some growth shock scare. You know, someone will get junked. There'll be some fraud somewhere. You know, there's something will happen. There'll be a panic, or Italy has another wobble or whatever. And then I think we'd look to lock in yields at better levels. We're pretty positive. We just got to get our sovereign positioning right. And eventually that sovereign duration will get swapped more into credit duration. And we need to pick that opportunity. We want to be able to buy, you know, when everyone else is panicking. And that's quite brave. And we need to be pre-positioned for that. And that's what we hope to do. It's probably this year, maybe next year. Who knows? Maybe the Fed will engineer a beautiful soft landing.
Some cynicism in that time. But John, we'll call time there. Thanks so much for that update. Really useful. And again, many thanks on behalf of clients for preserving capital better than many of your peers last year. It's a very difficult time for markets. To our listeners, thanks very much for listening. Let us know what you think on Twitter, referencing hashtag Brewing Podcast, or leave a review on iTunes or SoundCloud, whatever platform you listen to us through. But until next time, many thanks for listening.